mother's life. That's not permissible. So the fetus is alive. The soul has entered it. It may pose danger to the mother's life. Even if it poses danger to the mother's life, it is not permissible to have abortion. Of course, there are some medical solutions to it. Maybe the fetus may be pulled out and placed in an incubator. I think it's the, there's a machine in which the premature children are placed. Yeah. So there are other solutions possibly, but it's not permissible to have abortion even if it spells danger to the mother's life. Of course, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that in the event that carrying on with the pregnancy could prove fatal to both the fetus and the mother,
mm-hmm.
and there is no way to save the baby's life, but it is possible to save the mother's life through abortion, in that case, it is permissible to have abortion.
Mm, I see. Thank you very much.
Because the life of the mother is more important.
Yes, exactly. But thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws concerning the medical issues based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Well, Sheikh, there is a mother who has aborted her 7-month-old, illegitimately conceived fetus at the request of the father. Should blood money be paid, first of all? Assuming that it's a must, who should pay it? In other words, the mother or the father? How much is the blood money nowadays, according to Ayatollah Khamenei?
As we discussed this issue a little bit in one way or the other in the previous episodes, it is absolutely forbidden to abort the fetus, even if it was conceived due to adultery. So now here we say that adultery does not become a license for having abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, adultery is absolutely forbidden.
Yes.
But if a child is conceived, it's not permissible for either the wife or the husband to opt for abortion. The request of the father actually does not justify the action. The wife should not accept such a request, and it should not become a license. Also, the woman should bear the blood money if she had taken the initiative to abort the fetus, because she accepted the request, and of course the request, for example, was from the husband.
Mm-hmm.
But who was involved in the abortion? It is supposedly the wife who took the initiative to abort the fetus, and she performed the action that resulted in the abortion of the child. Now, as for the amount of the blood money, of course, it is doubtful in the given case. As a matter of ihtiyat or caution, a settlement should be reached. You know, that the person who was involved in the abortion and the owner of the blood money should come to a settlement, a solution, and see how much they can compromise on this issue. And
Who should be compromised?
The two parties. Okay, uh-huh. The ones who should have should inherit the blood money, and the one who was involved in the abortion
directly or indirectly.
Directly, because the one who's indirectly involved is not to blame. Of course, in this case, he doesn't have to pay any blood money. Only that person who was directly involved, maybe the doctor, maybe the wife.
But normally the doctors, don't do that.
Normally that, of course.
So who should pay the blood money if the doctors aren't?
The doctors are liable, the doctors are responsible, and the one, if it was the doctor has to pay the blood money. Because no, it's not permissible, it's none of the doctor's business to accept such thing. Mm-hmm. And the doctor can choose not to accept carrying out the operation and terminating the pregnancy. If he does accept, then it is he who should pay the blood money. Now,
even if the parents actually ask them or her to do so,
he will not terminate the pregnancy without either the wife or the mother or the husband asking him to terminate the pregnancy.
Right.
I think it's something the doctor has to be held responsible for, and he has to give the blood money. And the amount of blood money is something that's doubtful, because it's not definite.
Mm.
It depends on the month or the age of the pregnancy and so on and so forth.
Okay, I have a relevant question, but we have to actually postpone it to after the break. So stay with us to hear that question. Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shacha with our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to medical issues based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, I have a relevant question, or a question related to the previous question that I asked just before the break regarding the amount of the blood money. And you said in an answer to my previous question that it depends on the age of the fetus, right?
Sure.
So how much is the blood money, for example, for deliberately aborting a fetus of 2.5 months? And to whom should it be paid?
Well, if it is a clot-like structure,
mm-hmm.
the amount of blood money is 40 dinars. Now, we should see how much is a dinar in terms of dollar, or maybe the Iran currency or any other currency in this time and age. And if it is a flesh-like structure, it becomes 60 dinars. But when the fetus enters into the stage of a bone, but without the flesh, the blood money is 80 dinars. The blood money should be paid, of course, to the inheritors of the fetus, taking into consideration the classes of inheritors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are different classes of inheritors. Okay, the closest ones to the fetus should get the blood money. The person to whom the action of aborting is attributed, of course, must be denied a share in the inheritance, because he is or she is supposed to be the killer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the killer is not entitled to inheritance based on the solid and very authentic tradition that is there in our religious sources.
I see. Okay. Under the advice of the doctor treating her, a pregnant woman found it necessary to have an operation for her gums and teeth. Is it permissible for her to have an abortion on the grounds that an anesthesia and an x-ray are going to deform the fetus?
First of all, I think it's not permissible for the wife, to, of course, to treat her gums with such medicine that will deform the pregnancy or the child, the fetus, if there is a strong likelihood that it might cause such a problem. But of course, it is mentioned in the reason is mentioned in the question, and that reason is not valid for terminating the pregnancy. Of course, it's not permissible to have any kind of anesthesia for the X-ray, which would lead to deform the fetus. Even if it is used, then it's not permissible to have abortion for that very reason, which is believed to be invalid, of course.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Javid. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, Sheikh Javid, the guest speaker, and the rest of the crew, we wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Have a very good time. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. In 10th century Cordoba, an Umayyad Islamic dynasty city in Spain with over 70 libraries, the palace library alone had over 60,000 volumes, all written by hand. At the time, the best Latin library in Europe had only 600 parchment books. While the Chinese invested paper sometime before the 2nd century BC, Muslims were the first to mass-produce paper on an intercontinental scale, developing a culture dependent on its abundance. As the price of paper dropped, literacy rose and booksellers and libraries became integral parts of every Muslim city. Like Judaism and Christianity, Islam originated in the Middle East. And here's what's awaiting you on your radio station. Don't miss a beat. Up next is Let's Recite the Holy Quran. Mr. Habibullah Fasihzadeh will guide us. In this program, we teach eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. We also express tajweed points in the manner of confrontation or compare and match and apply them to the verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. A beautiful opportunity for reflection indeed. Then enjoy another segment from our radio productions. We've created a range of fascinating audio pieces for your listening pleasure. Coming up, we will have Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned.
Iqra bismi rabbika alladhi khalaq.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ya ayyuhal muzammil. الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
فدعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Mahdi. Thank you for having me, and assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music or the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. Then, we all are going to listen to a recitation by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. And at the end, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation from different aspects. Stay tuned. Now the first part and Brother Muhammad talking about the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. At your service, brother.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, we talked about the music of the Quran, and we said that by music, we don't mean, the kind of music that everyone talks about and everyone knows, where, you know, you have a beat and you have instruments, and or we have singing, song, and things like that. That's one meaning of music. Another meaning of music is the harmony, the peace of mind that you get from certain sounds. Mm-hmm. For example, whenever we hear the sound of the sea, the waves of the ocean, it's called the music of, for example, the ocean, the sea. It's yes. A harmony that it gives to us, the sound of just the waves of the sea. And with respect to the Quran, the same thing holds true, because just listening to all of the every letter and word and phrase of the Quran that we listen to, we feel that there is this harmony in the verses of the Quran, and we really like it, and it gives us a peace of mind. So we were talking about one aspect of the music of the Quran, which is the way that the letters are arranged and the letters that Allah has selected for each verse
to convey the meaning.
To convey the meaning and the effect that it has on us.
Or on our souls.
Soul and hearts. Yes. So, for example, we said the letter Qaf has a striking effect, a pounding effect, such as in the surah Al-Qari'ah. Al-Qari'ah. Mal-Qari'ah.
It's
the letter Shitta. Okay. Another example would be إِذَا السَّمَاءُ انشَقَّتْ وَأَذِنَتْ لِرَبِّهَا وَحُقَّتْ. This is about the Day of Judgment, whenever the sky splits asunder. Whenever, وَأَذِنَتْ لِرَبِّهَا وَحُقَّتْ. These all are signs of the Day of Judgment. And just through the shaddas, the tashdeed that we have, إِذَا السَّمَاءُ انشَقَّتْ, we could feel that actually it depicts the splitting of the sky and the other signs of the Day of Judgment. Or, for example, Surah Al-Waqi'ah, إذا وقعت الواقعة ليس لوقعتها كاذب. Again, we have qaf and kaf. So Allah chooses strong letters for conveying meanings such as those that relate to the Day of Judgment, because it's a very
difficult
and very harsh situation, and this really depicts that situation of the Day of Judgment.
Yeah, this is what we talked about in our previous session.
Yes, we talked about the examples of this kind of effect. Now in this program, we gave more examples.
Mm-hmm.
We said Surah Al-Inshiqaq, Surah Al-Waqa, or Surah Al-Qamar especially. اِقْتَرَبَتِ السَّاعَةُ وَانْشَقَّ الْقَمَرُ. When the moon splits and the Day of Judgment and the hour approaches, gets closer. اِقْتَرَبَتِ السَّاعَةُ. It's like we could feel, we could picture
the breaking,
the splitting of the moon, which is one of the miracles of the Prophet. Now, so this is one aspect, how the letters are arranged and which letters are used in order to, constitute the music and have that effect on us.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned. Well, dear brothers and sisters, in the second part, we're going to listen to a recitation by Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi. He's going to recite verses 62 to 65 of Surah to Yunus. Let's enjoy it.
في الدنيا وفي الآخرة
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, you're listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran. And what you just listened to was recitation of Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi reciting verses 62 to 65 of Surah to Yunus. And now Brother Muhammad will analyze this beautiful recitation for us. At your service, brother.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi is one of the great masters of Quran recitation who's from
Mashhad.
And he has trained many students who have become very skilled and proficient reciters of the Quran, such as Hamid and Hamid Shakir Nishad.
Okay, and the city of Mashhad is the city of Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi
salam. Exactly, yes. It's the city where the holy shrine of our eighth Imam, Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam, is located. Anyway, so Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi here is emulating the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit Muhammad Abdul Samad. When he was young, he imitated Abdul Basit, and later on he imitated Mustafa Ismail. And his voice is very similar to Abdul Basit. And when he emulated the style of Mustafa Ismail, it was as if Abdul Basit is reciting the Quran with the style of
Mustafa Ismail,
because he has good voice. Abdul Basit has the good voice. Mustafa Ismail has the good style. Okay, so it's like he combined these two together. And this is a really good thing because, you know, sometimes reciters have a good voice, but their use of maqamat and the up and downs of the maqamat, they're not really very much concerned with it, even if they're able to do it. Anyway, so this was about Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi. He's reciting in Maqam Bayati. This whole recitation is in Maqam Bayati. Ala inna awliya'a Allahi la khawfun alayhim. This is Bayati. And he recited entirely in this Maqam. Let's talk about the music now. The music of the Quran in these verses. We see that one aspect, like we said, is the letters. Another aspect is the length of the verses. When the length of the verse is relatively short, it makes it easier for us to understand the verse. And it doesn't require a lot of reflection and pondering as much as, I mean, in terms of understanding the meaning, of course, you have to ponder on all of the verses of the Quran, and you have to ponder deeply on all of the verses. But when it's shorter, it's like it's easier for us to understand. And then we have the rhymes in these. We have two sets of rhymes in these verses, which were recited by Brother Murtaza Sadat Fatemi. We have Yahzanun in verse 62, and in verse 63 we have Yattaqun. And this is about the awliya Allah, the saints of Allah, the very good friends of Allah. And so they both have the same rhyme. And then the next set of rhyme is verse 64 and 65. لهم البشرى في الحياة الدنيا وفي الآخرة لا تبديل لكلمات الله ذلك هو الفوز العظيم. And then the next verse, هو السميع العليم, عظيم, عليم. And as you can see, there's sets of rhymes, okay? So this has a very, we like this kind of rhyme and this arrangement of the words and the letters. It gives a very good feeling to us. And now the tajweed. Let's quickly go over some rules of tajweed. The matul munfasal.
Around 1 minute time, brother.
Yeah, in 1 minute we're going to explain the tajweed. Ala inna. We have matul munfasal here.
Disjunct, man.
Disjunct. The number of vowel counts that this good reciter, lengthened was two vowel counts.
Mm-hmm.
The qasr of maddul munfasil.
Maddul tabi'i.
Yes. So you're allowed to lengthen maddul munfasil to 2, 4, or 5 vowel counts. 2, 4, 5. And when you lengthen it to 2 vowel counts, it's called qasr. And you have to do so throughout your recitation. You have to be consistent with the lengthening of all your mats, especially maddul munfasil if it's qasr. We have a maddul muttasil, the opposite of maddul munfasil.
Conjunct mat.
In the word awliya, this is a conjunct, muttasil, mad, because the cause of the mad, the sabab of the mad, is in the same word as
the mad is.
As the mad. So we have conjunct, unlike the other one, the previous one, which the cause was in another word. Ala, inna. Ala and inna are two words, while awliya is one word.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
This is the love has dyed me in blood, nor that I'm wise, neither mad. Your love caused me all the joy, took my heart and made fond of it. Desired to kill. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in despair. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Me deeply involved in this pain. Now and then, like the winds I blow. Now and then, like the roads I go. Now and then, like the floods I flow. I'm Yunus, mystic of sorrow. So
suffering wounds from top to toe. In the hands of beloved, I write in woe. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in this pain.
The Flight Information Board in airports is a symbol of the fulfillment of a long-standing human desire. The desire to fly and the dream of reaching the whole world. Now the runways are full of airplanes and the airline route map is busier than ever. Airplanes have changed everything. A few hours of travel from one continent to another is only part of the story. Now global communications are influenced by the aviation industry, an industry that has overshadowed all aspects of life, from the movement of objects to the transmission of information and the flow of life. An industry that, of course, also has its dark sides, which were displayed in a strange exhibition.
When all that waste arrives at the airport, there's a limit to how much of it can be recycled because of international regulations. Here at Heathrow, 90% of cabin waste is incinerated or sent to landfill, and the airport wants governments to take a far more measured approach to that.
The exhibition was about waste. The seemingly ordinary waste that is produced on airlines. Things like disposable plates, spoons, forks, knives, glasses, headphones, and leftover food. On average, each passenger produces 1.3 kilograms of waste during a flight. Waste that ends up in the thousands of tons for an airline. Much of it is not recyclable.
With lots of that waste, we can't recycle as much as we would like to because it might have some food or some liquid that's contaminating it. So what we're really keen to do is to say, look, where a flight might be coming from America, where they've also got quite strict standards on food and plant health, we should be able to recycle more of that waste that comes off the plane.
Critics said that this waste was a serious threat to the environment, a threat that arose from our addiction to disposable tableware, a strange addiction that also exists in other aspects of life. Getting a cup of coffee from a cafe may not seem strange, so does buying a sandwich from a fast food restaurant. Even buying a bottle of mineral water or repeatedly using plastic tablecloths. But these seemingly simple actions are also considered addictions of our time, an addiction that completes the puzzle of the threat to the environment. A puzzle that was only partially visible in the exhibition. Critics were wondering about the effects of this puzzle, that our addiction to disposable tableware was strange and bitter. By looking at that waste, visitors were supposed to think about the things they had simply passed by, about the utensils themselves, and about the history and why they were popular, things that were strangely related to the past, to the turbulent history of humans.
For the last month, I have been living just like the average person. Eating, shopping, consuming, just like so many of us are used to. But with one big exception. I had no garbage can. Instead, I had to wear every piece of trash that I created. Every coffee cup, every plastic bottle, every shopping bag, every to-go container, every Amazon delivery. So, why would I do something like this? Well, for most of us, our trash is out of sight, out of mind. We simply throw it in the garbage can and never think about it again. So I'm here to take you on a little journey.
When it comes to disposable tableware, a disease comes to mind, a mysterious disease that has spread in Europe since the spring of 1918. The Spanish flu quickly conquered not only European countries, but the entire world. 500 million people were infected with the disease in a short time, and the death toll was reported to be dire. Some estimates say that between 50 and 100 million people were killed by the disease, that is, 1/20th of the world's population at the time. The number of deaths was so high that doctors began to think about treatment. Of course, there was no definitive cure for this disease. Perhaps that is why some people declared prevention as the cure. But the main problem here was that in those days, prevention seemed questionable. In 1918, neither detergents nor disinfectants were widespread. Public health was much worse than it is today, and beyond that, there was no news of safe drinking water. In fact, not only was drinking water not available to everyone, but there was another problem, an issue called shared utensils. It had been observed many times that several dozen people were drinking from the same glass of water. This situation, which seemed normal until then, raised many questions with the spread of influenza. Doctors said that using shared glasses was an important factor in the spread of germs, a factor that should be quickly abandoned. They seemed right, but there was a big obstacle for people. There were not many glasses, nor did they seem easy to move and wash. A big problem that was solved by an old suggestion. The issue went back two decades, 2 years of alcohol addiction.
With the bar lined with the boys and bums, spending their money, debauching their characters, rotting their bodies, and jeopardizing their immortal souls.
In the late 19th century, alcohol consumption was more common in Europe and the United States than ever before. It got to the point where social activists warned about the consequences of this situation and churches took action. Religious organizations soon came up with an idea. they traveled from city to city to encourage others to not drink alcohol. These people went to different areas with barrels of water and wanted to replace the water with alcohol. Their idea worked quickly, but there was still a big problem. A problem that an American lawyer noticed. Lawrence Llewellyn realized that people were drinking from a common glass without cleaning it. Subsequent research proved to Llewellyn that this was a significant factor in the transmission of diseases, so he set about solving the problem. After several years of continuous work on the problem, it finally paid off in 1907. Llewellyn had invented a cup that could be thrown away after use. A strange cup called the health cup that could change everything. His invention was interesting, but it had a long way to go before it became widespread. A year after Llewellyn's accident, something else happened. A public medical health officer from the state of Kansas accidentally discovered the importance of disposable cups. Samuel Crumbin, while traveling on a train, noticed that all the passengers were using the same cup. A situation that, considering that one of them was sick, alerted Crumbin to the danger. After getting off, he decided to change the situation. Llewellyn's invention came to Crumbin's aid here. Crumbin and his colleagues soon announced that the use of shared utensils in public places was prohibited, a law that paved the way for the production of disposable utensils. With this law, disposable utensils quickly became widespread.
This glass looks innocent enough, but look. The whole family uses this germ carrier that's rarely washed, only rinsed. It can spread colds, flu, virus through an entire family. Replace it with the new Dixie cup dispenser for the bathroom. See? Now, every member of the family can have his own clean Dixie cup that can't spread virus, colds, or flu. New dispenser comes with 50 cups. Goes up so easily, even on tile, you can do it yourself. 100 Dixie cup refills in the new blue box cost less to use than toothpaste. Put a Dixie cup dispenser in your bathroom. See if you don't have fewer colds, less flu.
They could now be easily found in cafeterias, schools, and workplaces, a situation that continued until the end of World War II. Of course, the end of the war was the beginning of a new path. The plastics industry, which had been developing slowly until then, published its results in the mid-40s. One of the first results was none other than the work of American inventor Earl Tupper. Tupper had created a plastic container that had a simple but important feature. Tupper's container had a lid that could increase the shelf life of food and make it easier to transport. Of course, Tupper also had a big problem. Most people did not like the appearance of Tupper's products. That is why this American inventor asked a marketer for help. Brownie Wise soon came to Tupper's aid. A new name was chosen for his products, the Wonder Bowl.
This is Tupperware, the airtight plastic containers that keep good foods fresher longer. Here's how. Put in the food, put on the patented Tupperware seal, then press down the center of the seal and lift a little at one side. Hear that whisper? That's Tupperware's airtight promise to keep foods flavor fresh. Tupperware comes in all shapes, all sizes.
A bowl that was to accompany wives to women's parties and gatherings. Wise had chosen the trick of selling person to person. Brownie women's parties were a place to show off these products. Parties that made the use of plastic containers in the home quickly became a fashion. A trend that spread to other sectors. In the mid-60s, Alan Frank reused the experiences of Topper and Brownie. If adding a lid could make a container a bestseller, why not the same thing for cups? The lid could make disposable cups easier to use. Keep the temperature of the drink constant and ensure better hygiene standards. Frank's idea made disposable cups more popular than before, a popularity that quickly affected other aspects of life. A strange and long-lasting effect.
I've made it my life's mission to break free from consumerism, show that there's another way, and live in harmony with Earth, humanity, and all our plant and animal relatives. But for the last month, I have set my normal life normal life behind, and I have immersed in the consumer lifestyle. I didn't try to create trash, and I didn't try to avoid it. I simply floated along in the breeze of consumerism. I would go to the grocery store and look to see what was in other people's shopping carts, and that's what I'd buy. I'd go to a restaurant and I'd ask, what's the most popular meal on the menu? And that's what I'd get. That's where this McDonald's wrapper came from around day 12, the Big Mac and fries.
A decade before the invention of disposable container lids, something else happened. In the mid-1950s, U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower issued a strange law, the Highways Act in the U.S. All states were to be connected from east to west and from north to south by a continuous network of modern highways. An ambitious plan that included tens of thousands of kilometers of roads. Long roads that also needed to provide welfare services for travelers. The first welfare service was nothing more than the provision of food, and urgently, a great challenge that coincided with another event. A few years before the Eisenhower plan, the McDonald brothers opened their first fast food restaurant in California, a restaurant whose idea was based on providing fast food, food that was ready quickly, sold quickly, and consumed quickly. Their initial customers were truck drivers who had little time to eat. Customers who soon took the McDonald brothers to the next level. The expansion of highways was what the McDonald brothers wanted. Now they could have a branch on every road to sell their products. Products that were ready in a few minutes, and their production process defeated the concept of time. Of course, it was not just McDonald's. It was soon followed by KFC. The secret to the success of this fast food chain was a combination of the need for fast food, the need for highways, and of course, one more important thing, something called disposable container, a phenomenon without which neither McDonald's nor KFC nor any other fast food would be able to expand or even survive. A possibility that conquered other peaks during the 70s.
So it was about 3 weeks into the project that I found that I could no longer fit into the car. But I was still able to get into the hatchback of the Prius that we had and show up at one of the fanciest Hollywood restaurants where I knew the paparazzi would be waiting, and they were.
The lifestyle of Americans was something like the cars produced in those years. Fast, powerful, and of course, high consumption. Americans would ride these cars on the road and would definitely pass by McDonald's branches. Of course, things were no longer the same as before. Disposable utensils had managed to make it so that no one would even get out of the car, especially with the lids that Alan Frank had invented. Americans would enter the queue by car. Within a few minutes, they would get their food and drink and get back on the road. Now was the era of movement, the era of overcoming the time, and the era of disposable containers. An era that soon mysteriously conquered the whole world.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio. Let's quickly navigate what's coming up next. We're excited to present these programs, so please stay with us. Time to delve into economic divide. If you are interested in economic or business issues, then this program is definitely for you. Top experts on the economy give expert analysis and commentary on the biggest business and economic stories of the day. mind-provoking insights into the economic issues. Then it's time to listen.